Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:01 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is January 4th, and I'd like to wish everyone a Happy New Year, and it's good to be back at the desk. I certainly feel refreshed. Certainly, there's a lot to talk about today. We've had a lot of big moves, and particularly in the cryptocurrency markets over the weekend. And it's also quite interesting that we're seeing a lot of movement in the crypto markets over the weekends. So it would appear that traders are at their desks over the weekends, and they're using the period of time which is reasonably low in volume to move the market. But I thought that the fact that the US 10-year break-even rate is back above 2% for the first time in quite a while is something that's probably one of the factors behind the strength in gold today. The last time it was above 2% was in 2018. The easy way of thinking about what this rate represents is it would be the presumed rate on the 10-year yield that would be required to insulate one's holdings from inflation. So the break-even rate is currently at 2.01%, but the 10-year yield is a lot lower than that. It's currently at 91 basis points, and in fact it contracted a little in here today. So we have very clear arguments for negative real interest rates. And of course what that means is that the Federal Reserve remains willing to continue to run the economy hot, and arguably it's not hot yet, but they're willing to run inflation fears warm at the very minimum in order to try and erode the massive debts that were taken on this year and to reignite speculative activity and economic growth. But of course that is going to have a knock-on effect in the purchasing power of the dollar. And gold was strong in here today. It finished on the high of the day, or very close to it, up $44. Now, it has not quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and this move is really quite similar to the one that we had at the beginning of November. So that move was capped with a rather large downside key reversal, which resulted in a fresh low. So in order for this to really be a confirmatory move and that it's likely to be the beginning of a new recovery period, we're going to have to see upside follow through, at least a break in the sequence of lower rally highs, and most particularly for it to take out that high from early November, which was around the 1965 area. But certainly it's looking more positive than it has in a while. I think what is encouraging on this occasion is that silver has broken up and away from that peak in early November. So it is now moving back to a position of outperformance. And it is quite likely that silver will lead its way out of these occasional corrections for the duration of this bull market. One of the defining characteristics of the transition from the disbelief stage to the acceptance stage is the return to outperformance of silver. Generally, gold makes the early running, then silver tends to play catch-up a couple of years later, then silver tends to outperform all the way through until the eventual peak, and when it eventually does peak, it'll be at a very significantly higher level than the last peak. And the last peak was close to $50, so there is potential that silver could outperform here by a very substantial margin over the duration of this long-term bull market. And I do think it is likely to be a long-term bull market because we're in a period of time where the mining sector has really given up on capital expenditure. There's a really very interesting chart posting a comment of the day today which really highlights that historically there has been a lot of interest in capital expenditure as prices rose, but there's been a very marked divergence over the last couple of years. So against that background, then there isn't a lot of enthusiasm in the mining sector to borrow a pile of money and go off and explore and build new mines because they're still chastened from what happened last time. And the last time they did that, their share prices underperformed, they were running negative free cash flow, and their share prices collapsed during the bear market. And investors are really only just coming around to the realization that gold miners don't do that anymore, that they've adopted all-in sustaining costs, that they are much more conservative now, and they are willing to wait and let money accrue on their balance sheet before they make big spending plans, and they're increasingly rewarding shareholders. So the gold miners ETF rebounded today from the region of the trend mean. If this is a recovery for gold, then gold miners are likely to outperform, and this just looks like a first step above the base, and it is a really well-defined base. So against this background, where we have rising prices again and the fear of financial repression, I think it's not just a fear, it's clear reality of financial repression, against a background where there is limited supply because there is a downtrend in capital expenditure and there have been no new mines discovered or new world-class discoveries of gold in the last few years, well then that's a supply and elasticity meets rising demand market. So it is really, we're looking today at probably something approaching the redux of 2003. We're still, in other words, very early in the acceptance stage of this bull market. Then if we think about the last time out, the big supply in elasticity meets rising demand phenomenon was oil. And there had been a very lengthy bear market in oil prices, and there was this incredibly conservative mindset within the energy sector. I'll never forget that it was the chairman of BP on Bloomberg saying that he didn't think it was possible for prices to be sustainably above the $40 area. And then in 2004, they broke above that level and really never looked back. And it was the introduction of China to the global economy through its accession to the WTO and the massive draw on global demand that represented. And there was a lengthy period of time where it just took an enormous amount of capital devoted to increasing supply to surmount that massive demand surge, and it contributed to a very significant bull market and a step higher in the marginal cost of production. Well, we had a big move higher in copper prices for the same reason, China's massive infrastructure development. But copper is a lot firmer today than oil, and it's also in a supply and elasticity meets rising demand environment. Despite the massive investments in copper supply over the course of the bull market in the early 2000s, there were very few truly world-class mines actually brought online. And then the other big obstacle is that some of the biggest copper deposits are in Africa, in war-torn areas, so it's also rather difficult to get the stuff out. And against that background, we have got governments this year, well, in 2020 at least, committing trillions to a decarbonization plan. Well, rather than thinking about renewable energy being free, what it really means is that we're trading in reliance on oil for reliance on copper, lithium, platinum, and nickel. And that also represents a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment. When we're talking literally about trillions being spent on renewable energy infrastructure over the course of the coming decade, there's going to have to be a very significant commodity response. And there is just no appetite for that in the mining sector right now. What I find interesting is that the copper miners ETF has just also now moved to a new 6-year high, which is quite similar to what the copper price has just done, but it's coming off a substantially lower base. And I think this is the big message here, that investors might already accept that we're in a new bull market for precious metals, but they're only just coming around to the idea that that might be also the case for the industrial resources that give leverage to the renewable energy sector. When we think about the LME Metals Index, it's also pushing on to test at least the highs over the course of the last 6 years. In fact, in this case, it's more like 8 years, but it was a little bit negative at the end of last year. But there's clear scope that it is going to push on to new all-time highs within the next 18 months, based upon the size of the base formation overall. And of course, that doesn't mean that it can't consolidate. There's nothing goes up in a straight line. And then when we think about what the potential is, supply and elasticity meets rising demand, is the kind of thing that can last for years, because it takes years to find and then to develop new mines, and it requires an enormous amount of capital, and investors are really largely unwilling to commit capital to commodity enterprises until they have plenty of evidence of sustainability in price increases. And they're generally not willing to do that until well into a bull market already. So we're still in the early stages of this move. Lithium prices bottomed at the end of last year, and they continue to recover. It's a clear break of the trend, and it's just marching higher now. So we are definitely back into a demand-dominated environment. Interestingly, Tesla was in positive territory today, up $24, although was not able to hold on to all of the advance. The big question that is going to be on the lips of most people is what's going to happen in terms of the rollout of vaccines compared with the risk of additional lockdowns because of this new variant in the COVID-19 virus. There's a lot of speculation about whether the vaccines will in fact be efficacious against it or not. We simply don't know the answer to that. It is too early, and the testing has not yet come back. So it's going to be a while. It might be another week or two before we have real confirmation of an answer. The S&P 500 posted a downside key reversal today. Now, it did close off its low, and it has held the short-term sequence of higher reaction lows, but downside follow-through tomorrow would signal a peak of near-term significance and potentially the beginning of a reversion back down towards the mean. The Nasdaq also posted a downside key reversal. It has also continued to hold its short-term sequence of higher reaction lows, so it may yet rebound, but if we get downside follow-through, it would certainly increase the scope as well for a reversion to the mean. It might be emblematic of a rotation that we're seeing increasing interest in real assets, that investors are willing to take some money out of the phenomenally mega cap or large cap companies and into smaller companies in order to capture that alpha, and that we may see a period of underperformance by these large companies simply by virtue of the fact that most of them did phenomenally well in 2020 because of very unique circumstances which are unlikely to be repeated over the course of all of 2021. Then, as we think about the emerging markets, well, the Chinese market continues to push up and out of its range, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. I thought it is interesting, however, that the banking sector was among the leading decliners in China today, and it was off its lows, but it's certainly not confirming on the upside in the same way as the CSI 300. So they're definitely betting on some rotation away from the dominance of Alibaba. And this interesting phenomenon that Jack Ma hasn't been seen in public in 2 months and has withdrawn from a number of public engagements, suggests that the opprobrium being heaped on Alibaba by the Communist Party isn't about to let up anytime soon. But of course, what it does mean is that there is the potential that some of its competitors may benefit. So Baidu has been resurgent, although it does look a little overbought in the short term. And then we have the continued reasonable performance of Tencent, which was in positive territory today and could benefit from Alibaba's demise. Then when we think about some of the really the best performers in the Chinese market over 2020, then Great Wall is a bit of a standout. It is China's version of Tesla, and it was also in positive territory in here today. So we're definitely seeing that there is still interest in this renewable energy sector. Some of the companies are extraordinarily overvalued, but I do think that the less risky way to play this market is probably going to be through the commodities. And of course, thinking about risky plays, well, Bitcoin has been extraordinarily strong over the course of the holiday period. It's had an incredibly impressive Santa Claus rally, and then it pulled back rather sharply in here today. I did annotate a couple of charts in here today, and I think that they are worth sharing. So on the one hand, we have, it's probably worth considering who is owning or buying Bitcoin, and then how they're doing it. Well, its institutions are now starting to get active in the market. Back in, but then we also have the fact that futures volume is still only a fraction of the overall cash demand for Bitcoin. And generally, when we look at other markets, particularly gold, then the futures market dwarfs the size of the cash market. If we look back at the period in 2016 through to the peak in 2017, pullbacks in the order of about 40% were not unusual. In fact, they were buying opportunities for the duration of this bull market. And then when it took out the low in early January, well, then it really did signal that it was all over. But it does help to highlight that a 40% pullback is not beyond the bounds of possibility. Now, when we think about what's happening in 2021, well, we've had a very significant pullback in during the lockdown phase. It went down over 60%. Then we've had a pullback of 14% and 21%, 16%, and then we had the significant pullback in here just now. So that is similar size in terms of the percentages that we've seen in the last two consolidations. So therefore, if this is likely still a bull market phenomenon overall and a momentum-driven move like we've been seeing for the last few months, then the low for the Bitcoin reaction could have been seen today. On the other hand, if we were to see a somewhat larger pullback and similar to the kinds of little reactions that we saw in the run-up in 2016 and 17, then a 40% pullback is not beyond the bounds of possibility. And it just so happens that a reversion of 40% today would correspond with the 20,000 level, which coincides pretty closely to the previous peak. So therefore, it's possible that the low has been seen and that we may see additional upside over the course of the next few weeks from here, and that it would represent another higher reaction low. Or if we're going to have a more or a deeper process of consolidation, we could see a deeper pullback to the 20,000 level. The problem, of course, is that we're talking about massive moves in terms of percent, but also of points moved. And this is obviously going to be traumatic for anybody when they're watching the price jerk around by thousands of dollars in a day, but it just happens to be the reality provided by the market, and there's no point whinging about it. Then when we think about the Ethereum price, well, I've had a hunch at least that Ethereum would act like high beta Bitcoin in much the same way that silver does for gold, and that the real hallmark of a new bull market in Bitcoin would be the return to outperformance of Ethereum. Well, Ethereum jumped over the holiday period, and it's now back in the region of $1,000. 1,000 was a big psychological level back in the peak values in 2016-17. It briefly got up towards $1,200, tried it again, and here today. I think it's reasonable to anticipate that we're going to have some pause and consolidation in this area, but it's also likely to be very heavily influenced by what happens with Bitcoin. So we're certainly in an interesting environment overall. We can definitely think that the pound being a little weaker in here today, it was down about a cent versus the dollar. That's at least some profit taking following a period of relative strength over the last few months. We can now think about, well, what's likely in the UK. At least the UK is ahead of the curve in terms of vaccinations, certainly faster than continental Europe. There is also the potential that somewhat weaker currency will help to stoke investment demand. There is clear pressure on the UK administration now to deliver, and it looks like they are coming up with plans on how to ensure that the UK makes a success of Brexit. Because if they fail to deliver, then the Conservative Party is going to have a rather difficult time in the polls in future. So it really is all to play for. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.